Welcome on in to the Utah Blockcast. Somehow we made it to Cam's basement.
There's you know where else we made it to? God.
The ship?
The ship.
Back like we never left, baby.
Going.
I love that you both.
Back. To Vegas.
Back like we never left, baby.
That song was about Vegas, I think, originally. The original cut.
The original Biggie cut.
R.I.P. Biggie.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Before he freestyled it.
Man, yeah, Utah, back in the championship game, and it feels great.
Let's
How? I mean, I know how, and we can kind of recap how, but like, how? You know?
How,
like,
you say.
What?
Yeah.
And not even just, because the odds were long.
Yeah.
The odds started long.
But they were realistic.
Like, I
that
mean,
was
yeah.
the thing. It was like, it was 15% chance, like, all four
one
things
in,
would happen.
One in, what's that, six? One in seven?
Yeah, sure.
Ish?
Yeah, math.
One in six, one in seven?
Whatever, but, like, everything was generally not like, we're going to need a huge upset here. Like, no, everything was pretty realistic.
It was doable.
Right. But the odds still, again, 15% is really just a matter of the games. And like, you know, because statistics, I mean, for those who aren't familiar, it's easy to forget that, like,
or not even know.
UCLA versus Cal feels like, as a fan, when you're looking at it on paper, that's a 100% probability for Cal winning. Chalk it up. Or for UCLA winning.
I was going to say.
UCLA winning.
Yeah.
Chalk it up. Chalk it up for UCLA, right? Yeah. But, like, realistically, it's something like 88%.
It got a little scary, though.
And so, it did.
It was scary for a bit.
It did. But then, so then you get to games like Oregon State, where it's like 40%, and Washington, where it's like 55%. That's how you get to 15. But, like, so it's already unlikely. Yeah. But the manner in which it happened is what was even crazier. Because, and we wrote a little bit about this at in our UtahBlockcast.com newsletter today. It was in our rivalry week things. But the manner in which it happened was really
it was insane.
The best.
Incredible.
It was crazy.
If you didn't get a chance to watch the game, did anybody here watch any of that game?
Which one?
Of Oregon State.
Yes.
I did
Oregon
not.
State and Oregon.
I was following along loosely because I had a game of my own to monitor and.
Which was that?
It was Utah, Colorado.
Oh.
I have a job.
Oh, I didn't. I'll rewatch that one.
Yeah.
It's on the DVR.
Yeah.
I'll get it. Yeah. I'll get to it.
I'm paid to watch those games.
No, I had it on, just not like it didn't have my full attention.
Right. It was the secondary screen.
Because Oregon and Oregon State was on, and also I was cooking a Thanksgiving dinner. But, but like, yeah, when looking at the Utah game, watching the Utah game while I'm getting ready and everything, while I'm cooking this dinner, not really paying attention to the Oregon-Oregon State game. You know, you flip to the score at, like, halftime. And halftime, you look at the third quarter, and you're like, oh, Oregon's stretching this lead. It's 31 to 10 with just with 2:57 left in the third quarter. 31-10. That is some, and then you lose. That is some Falcons. That's Falcons Super Bowl like bullshit. Like, I don't know how
Utah BYU 2018. What was it?
Yeah.
Oh god.
45
yeah.
seconds left in the third, and they're down.
Truly, that's what it took for Utah to back into the Pac-12 championship
game. Yeah.
It took the Utah comeback against BYU in 2018, the Jason Shelley comeback. It took that.
But without one pass thrown.
That's what's crazy about this game. 16 straight runs.
Unbelievable.
Their last four drives that ended in touchdowns, all runs. Not a single pass thrown.
And by the way, have you seen those drives? Did you see what they actually were? Because they were bonkers. The first, like, so Oregon State scores in the third quarter, right?
Yeah.
And then you look and you're like, okay, so then Oregon comes down, kicks a field goal or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
To go 34-17. 34-17. Yeah. You're like, okay,
you're still
double the score.
Yeah.
We're still, you know, woo, still got some momentum here. Oregon State scores in a hurry. And then you look again and they score immediately again. You're like, how did this happen? That drive was 2 yards long.
That's so
funny. So that's how that happened.
Drop punt.
The next drive was 36 yards. For a touchdown.
Jeez.
And then the last drive, I know that might have actually been the last drive. Like, the fields that Oregon State got were so, so short, and they just capitalized. They were just like, oh, thank you very much, I will.
And it was methodical, too. Like, if you, like, I watched their 36, 37-yard one. no, like, it wasn't like a breakout run that got it going. They were getting 5-6 yards of just pounding the rock. Like, just, Oregon's D-line was 5 yards backwards, like, almost immediately. Oregon State's offensive line was a masterclass performance of run blocking.
Love hearing that.
Oh, my God.
John Wilner tweeted it, like, I think last week. I think it was Wilner. Sorry if it wasn't. Just something along the lines of, Oregon State is so solid at 21 positions, and they are, like, basically hopeless at the other one.
Yeah.
And that one is – and they didn't even need it.
Yeah.
They just – they were like, oh, well, we're hopeless at that one. We're really good at every other position.
No, completed.
Completed six.
They completed six passes.
And scored 38 points.
That's absurd.
On the road. Or no, they were home.
And it's not like the weather was horrible.
It looked like a nice day.
No, it was a good day. It was a good day.
Wild. Wild.
It was crazy.
And like Washington and Washington State wasn't without its own drama.
God.
That game
took forever.
It took forever.
Yeah, like it was in the first half still at like 10:35 or something. And that's when I was like, done. Like I'm
the
calling it.
BYU Stanford game that kicked a half hour after.
Was done before that.
Was done before the Washington State game or right around there.
That
was
a sicko's game. If you were
watching
that,
and it had everything. It had a missed extra point. It had weird fumbles, interceptions, a Washington defensive stop.
It was very much
the
game.
Everything.
Watching it as a Utah fan, it was very much the like knowing that the odds were so long going in, and you got the one break, and you're like, we still need this one more coin flip to go our way, and so it's like you're watching the coin flip in slow motion in the first half. And then the second half, Washington, you know, thank God, blew the doors off.
It wasn't until, like, the fourth quarter,
yeah,
though. It was back and forth. Like, there was a stretch in the third quarter. I think, like, Washington State punted from, like, pretty favorable field position.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what are you doing? Why are you punting? And then on the very next play, they force a fumble.
Yeah.
Second down.
Ask to answer.
Yeah.
Ask to answer.
That's what, you know, like, that's what it was. Like, that's the type of stuff. I think the mixed.
The
missed extra field
goal. Yeah, I think
like,
we call that an Iowa.
The kicker was like 100%.
Yeah, it was.
Like, extra points or something like that. And you're like, he missed.
As soon as you say it.
This
right?
game is spooked.
Yeah, an announcer, as soon as an announcer said, it's like, he actually hasn't missed an extra point this
year. You're just
year.
Like, no!
And Steve,
why?
Steve coined it on, I think, on Twitter. You replied to my tweet about it, because weird stuff happens in Pullman. It's the Palouse Triangle.
It's the Palouse
weird
Triangle.
Weird stuff happens on the Palouse.
I can attest to Washington having a great kicker, though, because he was my, he did great as my backup on the Blockcast Fantasy, which I lost the championship. Shout out to Loaded Granola for the win.
Yeah, shout out to Loaded
good
Granola.
Job. That was a lot of fun. And thank you. Shout out to Stu Johnson for setting that up. That was so much fun. And if you want to play next year, sign up for the Discord at utahblockcast.com.
There you go.
The one thing I want to say, too, about the Washington State game is I think M. Dahl tweeted this.
Yeah, Emily.
Shout out, Emily. Saying like, oh, like when the game time got started for, or got announced for Colorado, Utah, I was like, oh, cool. Utah's playing early. We'll be done. We don't have to care about college football for the rest of the night. And then it's just the gif of Lee Corso going, not so fast, my friend. And I'm like, yeah, that's like the perfect. Like, I was like, yeah, I'll be done. We'll be done with football by 5 o'clock. Nope.
No,
I was up till 12:30.
Yeah, that was a long day of football. Long day of football. I think she even said like she was exhausted.
Yeah,
like at the end of the day, like
she did.
Emily. What a day though! What a day though! Right?
It was.
Like starting with the game, which my goodness, like I pour one out for an Ohio State fan today.
No,
they're,
don't.
They're
no,
feeling
no,
it.
Don't.
They
don't.
Are.
They don't need it.
They are.
They don't deserve it.
Oof, they
don't
are.
Pour
they
one
are
out
going
them.
Through it. They are going through it. That was another question we asked in our article today. Was you know, is Ryan Day going to lose his job for going to the Rose Bowl two seasons in a row? Like, man, woo, that's some perspective.
Bro, they let Michigan go in there and just put it on them. And it wasn't even, like, and they beat them at their own game.
Yeah.
They beat them
explosive
throwing
plays.
It, chucking it deep.
I mean, Ohio State. It
I mean,
was,
they still ran the ball and had a couple of big
yeah,
chunk
I mean,
plays. But,
they
yeah,
did,
you know,
they
still
had,
had,
what, like, 370-yard running touchdowns?
Yeah, you know, they still
something.
Ran the ball. But yeah. They threw it. They threw
Ohio
more
State
than,
was very beatable going into it, though, and it really was, like, I mean, if you watched them play, they couldn't run the ball. And it's like, hey, if they're one dimensional, Michigan's just, you know, licked their chops and here we go.
Man. So funny. It was so funny. Like the first half, it's like, yeah, Ryan Day brought Jim Knowles in to stop the Michigan running attack. And that's his sole purpose in being here. And it's like, bro, all you did was load the box with like 8 and 9 defenders. You did nothing special.
Yeah.
And then you get burned deep.
It just shows so too, much. Just outside of Michigan and Ohio State, how bad the Big Ten is right now.
Oh, it's
bad.
It's bad. It's bad.
And I get, okay, throw Penn State in there, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, Penn State's pretty good. Like, it doesn't seem like they should be good, but they are sneaky, pretty dang good. They just had to play Michigan and Ohio State. They might not have played Michigan.
But outside those three teams.
No, they did.
Did they?
Yes.
Maybe they didn't play Ohio State.
No, yeah, they did. Yeah,
Michigan
played them both.
Put a lot of them pretty good.
Anyway, I think Penn State's decent. But yes, point taken. The West is a mess.
Ugh.
Yes.
Who ended up coming out? Is it Iowa?
Purdue.
Wow.
Yeah. Purdue.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Out of the I didn't even remember them being in the discussion. It was Minnesota and Iowa. And like, yeah, Purdue off the top rope.
Off the top. Well, real quick, let's handle some mullet stuff, some business stuff.
We're pretty deep in. I think it's a mohawk at this point.
Okay, fine. We'll do that. Because what else do we need to talk about?
We have a couple things in the mullet real quick.
Okay, so
before
we
get to Utah's,
so we're not doing the mohawk.
Before we get to Utah's rematch of Ohio's upcoming rematch of against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, before we get to that, we will talk about what we've got going on. Two things that are really important. One is we are doing another charity drive. Thank you all for donating to the Thanksgiving food drive that we had for the Utah Food Bank. We raised $3,276, if I'm remembering correctly. That is awesome. That is so awesome. They claim that $9, that they get $9 for every dollar that's donated worth of food because of their opportunities of scale and things like that. So that was basically $27,000 worth of food that we collectively donated.
Damn.
So great job, everybody. Thank you for that. Appreciate all your donations. Now we'd like even more, but we're going to do a charity coat and blanket drive, to support the Road Home here in Salt Lake and the, rescue mission of Salt Lake. Basically, they're in dire need of coats, gloves, hats, pants, socks, any type of winter clothing that can keep people warm. It is very cold out. We've had a particularly cold November in Salt Lake. It's currently, as we're talking about this, snowing
dumping
and
snow.
Like 20 degrees. And people have to live in that. And there's families who have to live in that and who don't have proper clothing to handle that. And we just don't want that to be the case. So we are teaming up with our friends at Give 'Em Hell Brigham, Jeff and Garrett over there. And collectively, we're hoping to get 250 coats donated. And then however other many blankets, you know, gloves, hats, whatever else. We're going to have some pickup locations and everything probably that we can announce next week. We'll get all that coordinated, and we'll also do some picking up of our own. So we'll get that all coordinated and announce that next week. But start putting together any coats, blankets, winter clothing that you can donate, that we can donate to the Road Home and the Rescue Mission of Salt Lake. If you'd rather donate cash, we will make a trip to some store, buy a bunch of coats and donate those instead. If you'd rather donate in cash, there is a GoFundMe that is on our Twitter page. We've tweeted out a bunch at BlockCastPod, or you can go to UtahBlockCast.com and we'll have we'll make sure it's easy to find there.
Beautiful. Yeah, love it. No, the donations that we got last week for the food drive was awesome. And we're excited about the coat and blanket drive and getting more donated there as well.
And that's the last charity thing we'll ask of you until the next one, hopefully of this year.
Till next week.
Yeah.
Till next week.
Oh, I think that's all I got.
That's the business? That's the mullet?
I think that's all the business.
Well, cool. So, yeah, Utah, huh? Utah. Football back in the championship game.
We're back, baby.
They're back.
Yes. So, do we want to? We don't want to spend any time on the Colorado game because it's. We don't want just. Is it worth spending any words? Do we want to shout out any moments?
Jaquinnen Jackson breaking out, and that's yeah, and Dalton Kincaid's insane catch.
The defense, the first half performance by the defense that gets no love.
Defense minus Clark Phillips. and you know, however many injured guys, like
I'm just trying to make it quick, incredible. Steve.
18 total yards. That's absurd.
I mean, Colorado is
one first down.
Colorado is bad, bad.
They are bad, bad.
But that's still
not
very
that,
good.
Like, they've never been that bad.
They might
in
be
a half bad.
Oh man, yeah.
Like that was bad.
That was really bad.
And that was really good for Utah defense.
Yeah, Utah's defense really locked in. And actually, you know, there was some concerns that maybe, you know, this could be kind of a hangover game for them. You know, after the Oregon game, after kind of a disappointing loss there, they didn't look great. That maybe the team was kind of coasting into the end of the season there, especially as their the Pac-12 championship games looked, you know, were waning. Their chances were waning. And they just absolutely curb stomped the Buffs. It was... What did it end up being?
63-21.
63-21.
That's triple. That's three times, right?
Yeah.
Sure is.
63.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad.
That's pretty good.
Good job, Steve.
Thanks.
Anyway,
I got you.
My moment's got to be Yasmin. Yasmin.
The hurdle.
Yasmin's hurdle. Showed great ass.
The six T's.
So good. All of it. But
the tongue crip gang just throwing it up.
What looked like a 5-yard out turned into a 41-yard touchdown. It was
fantastic.
Absolutely amazing stuff.
And, like, small shout-out, too, to Makai Cope for peeling off his guy and blocking the dude who was just about to tackle Yasmin before the hurdle.
Shout-out
to
Makai
Cope,
who also scored his first touchdown in his career, which was good to see.
Touchdowns for everybody this week.
Touchdowns for everybody. Woody Parks got one.
Handed him out.
That? But, yeah, we'll talk some more about Jaquinda Jackson because –
Oh, shoot. There was more business I totally forgot about.
Oh, no.
Oh, geez.
So what's the – so there's a mullet. There's a mohawk.
Oh, boy.
This is like the spiked punk mohawk where
yeah, this
kinda,
is getting
there's
mohawk.
Breaks.
This is getting
there's
a little
breaks
bit.
In it.
Ooh, yeah. Bad. Okay. Anyway, it's a big one, too. I can't believe I forgot
man.
It. We're doing 30% off this week.
Oh, yeah.
At UtahBlockcast.com.
Okay, yeah.
If you sign up for a Blockstar annual membership, it is $70 for a year instead of $100 for a year for this week to celebrate Utah returning to the Pac-12 championship game. So if you've been waiting, now's a great time. If you're looking for a you know, creative gift for the Utah fan who has everything, this would be a great thing to sign up for them, you know, under their email address or something, or to you know, gift to a friend or a loved one who's a Utah fan. Or, you know, like I said, if you want to sign up for free, you can just go do that at UtahBlockcast.com and sign up. But if you want 30% off, go to UtahBlockcast.com/Vegas. UtahBlockcast.com/Vegas, and you'll be able to get that 30% off the Blockstar membership. That'll get you access to all of the paid newsletters. It'll get you access to all of the paid podcasts. We're recording another one immediately after this. And it will get you access to the Discord, which is really where we're having the most fun.
Yeah.
It's a really great place for free flowing conversation. You know, a great place to really talk about, you know, online or talk about sports and whatever else.
Really
without,
everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Without,
everything.
But in a more, I don't know, I want to say kind of a communal way, where, you know, it feels a little bit more personal. People, you know, it's more respectful. We have some pretty strict rules about respect and stuff. And
it's like Twitter, yeah. But cooler.
Yeah. It's been good.
It's Twitter, but cooler and nicer.
Yeah, very much. No, absolutely. So come join the Utah Blockcast, the Discord. We love that.
Anyway, back to let's not go back to Colorado.
Let's not. Yeah, we spent too much time on Colorado.
Yeah,
guys, four straight championship bursts for Utah.
Yeah, 2020 doesn't count.
It doesn't.
Yeah,
no,
2020 didn't happen.
It never
truly
happened.
So even if we count it, four straight in 5 years. My
pretty
goodness.
Damn impressive.
That's good.
Like even I mean, backing in this year and then like last year, I mean, in a certain sense, right? Like getting in with a poor record, a good conference record. Even with those, that is still so impressive that Utah has been able to put themselves in position. And they were competing in the final spot for two seasons before they finally made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 2015 and 2016 season, they were right there. Or, excuse me, 16, 17, you know, really all of those, 15, 16, 17, they were really right in the mix. 17, not so much, right? But for, six of the past six of the past 8 years, Utah's been in the mix for the Pac-12 championship or been in the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing stuff for a team that was, you know, frankly has only a handful of conference championships to its name, like in the past three decades.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like this is impressive.
This is peak Utah football, right?
This is the peak for Utah football. They are, I don't want to say dominating because that's not true, but they are competing with the best in a much more talented conference than they've ever been in.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say, is this as talented of a conference as Utah has ever been in? Right.
Oh, yeah.
Now?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just USC being back and so much better, filling that void.
Yeah.
Oregon is great right now.
Washington's great.
I mean, you know, was great. Oregon
I think
looks
that's
like they're
the thing,
a little.
Right? It's like, it's not just that Washington is back, but like Kalen DeBoer and what he did with Washington in year one, like that's impressive. Jonathan Smith continuing to get Oregon State to perform, outperform. You know, expectations.
There's
like
six teams in the top 25.
It's remarkable. Like, this is the best the Pac-12 has been in quite some time.
Long time.
Long, long time.
Long time.
And so that's why it's going to be so, you know, equal parts devastating and delicious, cutting off the conference's nose to spite its outgoing face.
I love it.
When Utah beats them on Friday, it's going to be so delicious.
We said this, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, where we said it'd be the funniest outcome that 2 years in a row, the Pac-12 darling that's supposed to be the playoff contender loses twice to Utah.
Utah just curb stomps them twice. Just, nope. Oh, I'm sorry.
I know we're new here, but yeah, no, we're not going to let that happen.
Yeah, no, and it is funny that in both scenarios, it does have interesting parallels right there, right?
Yeah.
Like, it obviously doesn't have the blowout coming in like Utah had with Oregon, where there was so much confidence from the Utah side because you just absolutely beat the crap out of Oregon. But then doing it even more so, really in a more dominant fashion in the next meeting 2 weeks later. This is a different story. I mean, you're still seeing that parallel of, you know, you beat a team at home a few weeks earlier, right? Six mm-hmm. weeks or so earlier. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing them again. But this USC team is not that Oregon team.
No.
No.
Far from it.
Very far from it. So Steve, I guess, what do you expect from – I know normally we'd want to get a little bit more into the week, but having already seen USC, having seen how Utah has changed and maybe, you know, how USC has changed or how things have developed there, how do you see the matchup changing?
I think, like, the one thing that you can go into this game feeling better about, obviously, is the defense, right? Like, we've seen the defense come along.
So much better.
Yeah.
So much better over the last month. And I think it's not just that they've played, you know, lesser opponents. It's that they've improved. That, like, they've gotten better individually in terms of how they're playing. It's not just that they're making plays. It's how they're making the plays. They're doing it fundamentally sound and just looking better, playing better. Better football. So you're coming into this game feeling better about the defense. You know, USC is playing good football. They knocked off a decent Notre Dame team, but it's still a Notre Dame team that lost to Marshall earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Have struggled.
And Stanford.
And Cal. They lost to Stanford.
Stanford.
They didn't lose to Cal, but they probably should have
lost to Cal.
So, you know, what is that Notre Dame team? I don't know. An overranked 15th team in the country at the time.
Yeah.
But that game, you know, that game was physical. I would be curious to hear, like, to see if there was, like, a way that you could get a physical toll chart of the two teams. Like, who took the bigger physical toll last week? Because it certainly wasn't Utah,
it was
but Colorado.
Utah.
But, you know, like, I just think coming into this game with Caleb Williams playing the way that he's playing, like, there's certainly going to be a lot of confidence with Caleb Williams. But I think, like, the Utah defense has made, I don't want to say an equal amount of strides, right? But they've made a good amount of strides.
Oh,
they're coming into this thing with a good amount of confidence as well.
If you want to talk about strides, I think the Utah defense has made more strides than USC's, like, probably.
And that's
offense.
Probably the better way to say it, right?
USC's offense has really been doing what it's been doing all year.
Yeah.
I mean, the way they played against Utah, the way they played against UCLA, the way they played against Notre Dame is not a huge difference from, like, they with what we're going to see on Friday. But go back to Utah's defense against USC and how they've been playing against Oregon and against Colorado. I feel like those strides are farther along than what USC's offense has. So I think USC's offense is going to be a little, I don't know, maybe surprised a little bit about how Utah's defense comes into this game. At least I hope so. So
I'll throw one caveat into that. And it's something that I'm interested about with this defense, because there's a lot of question marks about who's actually going to play on this defense. We obviously have some injuries that we've seen since Utah has played USC. Most notably, Van Fillinger hasn't played and won't be playing for the rest of the season. But we didn't see Clark Phillips last week, and I think we have collectively been hopeful that that was just precautionary because Colorado is ass. But is there anything more to that, or is there any concern about A, Clark being out for the Pac-12 championship game, and B, is there concern that, you know, Utah's players, that defense, the strides that we've seen from Utah, is there concern that, you know, the missing players still will kind of be too much of a detriment since that last USC game?
You know, it's going to be interesting. Like, I fully expect Clark to play, right? Like, I think we're all kind of in the same boat. Like, fully expect Clark to play, but it's still
kind of... Has there been any reports of an injury for him?
No.
It was just, we think...
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Listen.
We're not saying words, but, you know, we're all on the same page here. It's Colorado. Listen, you know, it's Colorado.
I mean, there are... You talk about business decisions. This was a business decision.
Tavion hurt his toe and is going to the NFL draft. Like, you know, like...
It was an insurance policy.
Yeah.
There was no reason... Listen, he could have played in that game and... My goodness, would he have been having... It would have looked like he was playing against high school kids. No offense, Colorado. But, I mean, the tape is what it is. That drop, that ball that Vaki dropped, Clark doesn't drop that.
I had forgotten about that.
Like, right, but those little things that, like, the little things that the defense just... The defense looked great, phenomenal, but just, like... Imagine if the best player in the conference was out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, getting back to your question, like, I think collectively Utah still has enough where you're not going to stop. Like, USC is going to score a lot of points. Like, let's be clear. What you're hoping for is a handful of stops throughout the game, right? Like, that's the goal. We're looking to get stops in certain moments, in certain situations. And I think Utah has the players on the defense side of the ball to still do that. You know, I don't want to say a good amount, but they should be able to hit, you know, a good number. They should be able to get a number of stops here, right? Like, and I think the reason we can say that is because there have been individuals that have made tremendous strides this season, right? Zamylan Vaughn, first and foremost.
Zamylan,
baby.
Absolutely.
Man, he looked good against Colorado, too.
It's hard not to.
Who didn't look good?
Who didn't?
Colorado.
Samote Big Papa Peppa, you know, has made tremendous strides. And another defensive, Aliki Vamahi. Yeah, I was just going to say. And those three alone, I shouldn't say those three alone, but the progress those three have made are valuable for Utah in this matchup because, yes, USC has a ton of receiver talent, right?
Yeah.
Like, they've got Caleb Williams slinging it around. But this is still a USC team that ran for 2,200 yards. They still are committed to the run game. They still have a running back in Austin Jones and Relik Brown, a five-star talent, that can do that, that make the run game dangerous for USC, right? And so you have to be able to shut that down. And I think the development of Samote Peppa, of Aliki Vamahi over the last few weeks has been huge for the defense in
literally.
general.
Literally, because those two are huge human
beings. Massive, big people.
So big.
There was a play in the Colorado game where there was like a huge hole there for a second, and then like it just immediately got filled.
It was Vimahi. He just swallowed it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, ridiculous. And that was the story of the night. Like, Colorado would open holes, and then by the time the running back would get there, they were gone. There was nothing to be had
finished.
Ever. You see that sometimes where a play is a little too slow developing and the running back just can't get there. But it was just every time it had to have been so frustrating as a Colorado running back to just every time you see a hole, it just gets filled by a Utah jersey. It's so tough.
Like as you're taking the ball too, because like when as a running back, your eyes are there. Your eyes are looking for a hole before you even get the ball and you probably get excited. You're like, oh, there it is. I'm about to put my foot down and go. And then next thing you know, you're looking at Samote Pepa's face.
Yeah, it's gone. So, like, I think the progress of those individuals, Amylan Vaughn, Samote Pepa, Aliki Vimahi, are huge for the defense.
Yes.
But then also, like, the emergence of a player like Sione Vaki, who is this
my
hybrid.
Favorite player on the defense this year.
He's been so fun.
It started as Clark. I mean, and I'm such a DB like bias.
Of course,
but like
just like Tyson is a fullback.
Yeah,
Homer.
But like Clark is the obvious choice, right? The front runner choice there. But Vaki's just been so fun to watch.
So fun. And
his development in just a few games out there, I mean, seeing how quickly he's adapting to, I mean, the play we talked about that he almost made, like next year when he sees that play coming, you know, a half second sooner and he can get his hands up, he's going to walk that in backwards.
And once again, the downfall of being, an elite cornerback like Clark is just, no one's going to throw it to him.
Right.
And the benefit of Vaki's position is he's going to be around the ball a lot.
If there was, God willing, if there was another Clark Phillips on the other side and defenses had to throw to one of them, four-star DB recruits, come to Utah.
Come to Utah.
My goodness, look what we're doing here.
So, like, Utah, like, So Clark Phillips is going to be very important to Friday's game, right?
Yes.
Like I was rewatching the game from October, and you know, like he made plays, he gave up some plays, there were some mistakes, but just his confidence and swagger, like him and Jordan Addison were going
just
at each other.
Yes, I love when that happens.
Like there was a play that. Like Clark, I want to say he stiff armed him, but shoved him pretty hard. And Jordan Addison did not like it one bit. And it's like, that's the type of stuff though. Like,
yes.
You know, Vaughn, you've made strides, but I don't think you could pull that off.
No.
Like, you know, like,
no.
Because Clark can do that because he knows he's going to make plays. Like he can be physical. And he's not going to get bullied. He's not going to get bullied physically. He's not going to get bullied mentally.
Yeah,
he's a competitive sucker, and he's going to bring it. And Utah is going to need that Friday night. Like,
yes, they are.
They need that in a big way.
You need confidence like that, and then you need basically everybody on the defense feeding off of that. You can't just like in a game like this. You got to go out. You got to make plays, but you got to let the other team know you're making those plays.
Right.
Type of thing.
Right.
Like, don't get a stupid 15-yard penalty for taunting or anything like that. But, you know, build off that confidence that Clark has. Because if you get the whole defense starting to do that and playing off each other, that's going to be
like,
really bad for
that's
USC's
all it was.
Offense.
Like, it wasn't like Clark, like, cheap shot him.
No.
Like, it was.
Just say, I'm here.
It was just like a little press jam.
Yeah.
And he just was a little extra physical.
Yeah.
A little more physical than probably Jordan Addison was expecting. It was a run play and. You know, so he didn't play hard, but it's just like stuff like that,
yeah.
Like, you know, and so playing within the rules, playing within your fundamentals, but you know, you still have to play with that swagger. And
yeah.
I think Clark brings that swagger, that quiet swagger.
Yeah.
That is so synonymous with like Kyle Whittingham and Utah football. So, you know, he's going to be important. I think Sione Vaki is so valuable. Because he allows this defense to be so multiple, where you can do a variety of different things.
He's versatile.
Yes.
You know, like,
because again, you USC,
can you can put Cole Bishop into cover two. You can put him into mm-hmm. into deep coverage where you can go RJ on one side, Cole on the other. You can do that and still have an athletic safety type where he's physical against the run. He's athletic to defend. He's athletic enough to, you know, be in coverage against receivers.
But fast just enough to stay with guys in coverage, which yes. frankly against USC is kind of the
you're
ball
gonna
game.
Need that.
Like if you can't run with a guy on across the field, they will eat you. All day,
yeah.
That's what Lincoln Riley's done. That's what Clay Helton did before him. Because when you have the athletes, when they're faster than you, they're just going to run 40 yards across the field and be faster than you.
Yeah,
and having a guy who can run with them is so valuable,
right?
And he can.
Well, and the great part about him too is you can switch it up. You can flip him and Cole
absolutely,
and not just like do it. You know, come go out there and line up differently. Like you can mix, you can disguise your coverages and your personnel so well with two guys like Cole Bishop and Sione Vaki kind of being interchangeable. So you can have Cole Bishop kind of be up closer to the line, Vaki behind him, and then when the ball's about to get or getting closer to being snapped, they can just flip.
They can trade.
They can go. They can. This is really embarrassing that I'm forgetting the term for this, but they can. Like seesaw where, you know, you got Cole on one side and Vaki kind of up in the middle. Vaki can sprint up to the line on the, you know, the weak side or the strong side or the other side from where Cole's at. And Cole can just rotate back to where he was. You don't even got to flip him on the same side of the line.
Yeah.
You can roll just like, yeah, you roll him. That's coverages. What it was.
Yeah, you can roll your coverages.
That's like embarrassing. Seesaw. I couldn't think of that.
What is seesaw? Like, dude, I, like what
it's Monday and it I'm tired.
Snowstorm outside.
After that holiday weekend. I don't know about y'all, but I was exhausted after this weekend.
Well, you also had like three Thanksgivings.
And one of them on short notice. But it was so good. I love the holidays like that, man. I love being tired after a weekend like that. I mean, just squoze it all in. No, but yeah, kind of going back to Lincoln Riley's offense and kind of what they're going to see, what we should expect to see from Utah or from them. Story of the game for them is really going to be Caleb. Caleb Williams is going to, he's the Heisman candidate basically to be like, he is the front runner. Can Utah contain him? Is there any hope to? They didn't really in Salt Lake City. Frankly, Utah's not looked that great on the road all season. We talked about it last episode. They're a kind of average road team.
Is this a road game, though?
Right. This isn't a true road game. But there's going to be a lot of USC fans there. I think the game is sold out.
Oh, yeah. It's sold out.
Are there going to be a lot of USC fans?
Let's talk about this.
I think I think a lot of USC fans are going to be holding out instead of making the trip to Vegas, making the trip to the playoff.
Yeah. I don't know that a lot of USC fans have to choose. This is their first. They haven't won a Pac-12 championship since 2017.
Yeah, they haven't been there.
They haven't been going. They haven't been there for a bit. I think.
But they haven't been in the playoff conversation for that long either.
Yeah, but I just think they.
And you know USC fans are like cocky and arrogant enough to be like, nah, we got this. We don't need to go to this game. They'll be in the playoff.
I don't know, man. I think that there's still – because I still think there's a lot of – because the playoff is a different – like even just economically, so much more expensive.
That's true.
Than like even the Rose Bowl. Like the playoff game tickets are – your get-in price is – quadruple that.
That's
what it
true.
Would be at like the Rose Bowl, you know, or if you can get tickets to the Rose Bowl or frankly this conference championship game. So I think there's probably like there's a really large group of USC fans who will see this as their opportunity to see a Heisman candidate play for a championship game, right? Like again, and it's one of the last times they'll have a chance to.
Sure.
True. That's true.
Frankly, they're not going to win a lot of conference championships after. They're not going to have a lot of chances.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like, I think it'll be closer. I don't want to say it'll be 50-50. It's not going to be 50-50. USC is going to have an advantage. But I still think there's going to be a healthy number of Utah fans where probably 55-45.
Ooh. I'm not 40. That optimistic. I still think like 70-30.
Bill Riley,
no way.
On radio was saying like he was expecting it to be a heavy Utah crowd. I was like, I don't know about that. I'm not willing to go that far.
Bro, we only found out about it just the other day.
Like that's the thing. Like, I don't know about that.
And it's not like 5 weeks ago, we were like, Utah for sure. 5 weeks ago, we were like, "There's yeah, this team has a lot of question marks right now. Yeah. Like, Keithy's like, hurt. Cam is like, who knows? Like, something's going on with Cam.
It probably helped last year that basically everybody started buying up tickets and flights and stuff after the Oregon game.
Well in advance. So
I don't care. We're going to be louder.
The home crowd will be interesting, but there will still be a good contingency of Utah fans.
Totally.
Not a true rope. I mean,
I think the three of us will be there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be there.
You know, you've got that. How do you contain Caleb Williams? Can you contain him? I mean, you can't. He's proven that, you know, he's going to get numbers. He's going to produce. He's going to play well. He's going to.
I don't know.
He's tough.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I almost wonder. So, like, this is kind of a two-parter, and it's a bit of a tangent, I guess. Maybe we can come back to it, I guess. But, no, so, like, is it even worth trying to sack him? Like, get some pressure? Because he's so good at evading sacks and making a throw outside. Like, even not even outside the pocket, just stepping away inside the pocket and making ridiculous throws and dropping perfect ball. It's almost like, all right, just rush three then. Just rush three and put him in coverage because he's just going to evade it anyway.
Right.
And I know traditional thinking is like, no, the mobile quarterback does, like, ultimately you get more sacks with them. But, like, so, it just doesn't seem to be true with Caleb Williams. He seems like he never gets tackled.
Sure. Yeah. No, he I mean, he's avoided a lot of sacks. There was a play against Notre Dame. I think he, like, missed, like, four or six missed tackles or something like that. But anyways, in the Utah game, he was kept clean on 29 dropbacks, okay? So 29 dropbacks, completed 68% of his passes for 228 and three touchdowns. Under pressure on 19 dropbacks, so Utah got I think that is actually the second most, it may even be the second highest amount of pressure that Caleb Williams has faced all year.
Which isn't surprising. They haven't seen a lot of good defenses.
6 of 14, 43% completion percentage.
Oh.
Still 153 yards and two touchdowns.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
that's
when he gets you.
That's a roulette
when he gets
at this
you,
point.
Gets you. Yeah. Like, and that's an important thing to consider when you talk about these statistics of, like, the plays outside the pocket, right? Because, like, that is really important context because it paints a picture of what the plays are outside the context, right? Like, Caleb Williams isn't evading a sack and dumping it off for 7 yards on the sideline to a receiver who's there or, you know, scrambling it off to the side for a 3-yard run. He's evading these sacks and he's dropping dimes on 42-yard completions. And so a 45% clip, when you're doing that, I can live with that.
Yeah.
That's a great average when, you know, how many of those 42% throws were over 10 yards, I wonder. You know, it's just he seems to just produce chunk plays out of seemingly nowhere.
Right. Yeah, so it's tough, and this is kind of the battle that Morgan Scalley is going to be under. Is like how much do we try to get him under pressure? How much do we blitz? Because he's gonna hurt you either way, right? If you just let him sit in the pocket and cage rush, you're not gonna get to him. You're gonna keep your corners in coverage for 6, 7, 8 seconds, or you try to get pressure on him, and like we've seen all year long, he's just going to high-step, tippy-toe dance his way out of these sacks because he's Houdini. Like, there were a couple in the Utah game alone where it's just like, how did he get out of this?
They had
him in the end zone for a safety, and it's like, how did he get out of this?
There was one where they had him, like, someone had a hand on him, like, 18 yards behind the line of scrimmage or something, and he ends up turning it into a positive play.
Right.
And you're just like, How does this even happen? Like, how do you get to this position and then, as the quarterback, be like, I can still make something of this?
Yep.
And then do it repeatedly, habitually.
I think it's going to, like, kind of like the first game, it might come down more to outgunning him with the offense.
I think so.
Like you said, the USC is going to score points and Caleb Williams is going to do Caleb Williams things. You got to go punch for punch with him.
You do.
Okay, so this comes back to the tangent I wanted to go on before. Before we kind of talk about to the offensive side, because we haven't really touched on that yet, right?
No.
How in the hell did Oregon State hold them to 17 points?
It was, man, it was ugly.
But really, how did it happen? Like, because USC.
I didn't watch a second of that game, so I can't tell you.
I didn't either. I don't, but like, it stands out so sorely.
I need to go into
when
those.
You look at their record. They only have that one and one other game where they scored under like 38 points or something.
So Caleb Williams was 16 of 36 in that game, 180 yards, one touchdown. So I don't know. Like, they kept bodies in coverage. I know that much. Like, but they also blitzed. They blitzed a lot. So I had that backwards. I thought they kept bodies in coverage. They blitzed a lot. They blitzed on 18 plays about 40% of the time, which is more than Utah.
Wait, 18 plays 40% of the time, 18 passing downs.
18, yeah, on 18 okay. of his dropbacks.
I see. Okay. I was just like, wait, that's not enough plays. Did USC only run like 40 plays
no,
that game?
Of his dropbacks.
I'm going to have to okay. like I'm going to have to like go into like the Pac-12 network does those the game
rewinds,
the game in 60
replays.
Or whatever yeah. where it's just nothing but the plays there's like and they just cut all the fluff out from in between the plays. I need to go back and watch that game.
No, absolutely.
And see what they did.
Are those on demand?
Maybe.
I think so.
I think they are.
I think so.
Man, that might be a fun like stay up late project tonight.
But I know like
said the guy who ahead, can't ahead, stay Tyson. Awake past 10.
I was going to say I did see I think one of I can't remember which Oregon State corner like just declared for the draft today.
Rajon Wright.
One of USC's receivers like quote tweeted it. I don't know how it popped up into my timeline. But quote tweeted it and says, "I'm not going to cap, you guys had some like dogs at cornerback." Like
they have a good secondary.
They have a very good secondary.
Like said, good at 21 positions.
Who else has a good secondary, though, that USC's playing? Maybe on Friday.
I can't think of anyone.
Just saying. Zamylan Vaughn.
It's their best position group, and I think that's like, well, man, the defensive line has stepped up the past couple of weeks, but I think that defensive backfield is just, they look
oh,
so
it's the
good.
Best. It's the they best on so that, good. Oh, yeah, on that yeah. side of the ball, without question. So that's going to be the key. You got to be good in coverage. You got to be tough.
And you got to go. I'm gonna say you got to go punch for punch with them.
You do.
The offense is gonna
That's
need
the
to.
Whole thing.
Is gonna need to.
And their defense is bad enough that you can do it.
Yes.
So Utah did it pretty well.
The first game. First,
yes, they did.
Right? They did it very well last week.
Yeah. They did great last week. I think USC's defense is better than Colorado's, but. Like because
it's closer. USC is closer to
Colorado than it is to Utah.
Oh yes, absolutely. No argument there. But yeah, like I think this is where I'm most curious because Utah's missing again some guys on offense. Tavion's toe is hurt. He won't be there.
Who cares?
Like so, is there any concern there? Is there any? Frankly. Cam hasn't really been playing his best, and I know there was a couple of folks who were asking questions about his injury stuff, and it's just like, listen, it's week 14 now. Like, he's as healthy as a quarterback's going to be
yep.
at this point, right? Like, if he's not healthy, then...
Football's very hard on your body, guys.
Yeah, like, he's... Yeah, there shouldn't be injury questions there. So, like, should we expect, after last week, a better performance from Cam? Do we expect to see JJ continue a strong performance?
Oh, I think so.
How do we see the offense, going punch to punch with USC? Punch for punch.
Hot take here. I think the offense is going to be better with JJ right now than they have been all year with Tavion as the lead back. JJ's
say it louder for the people in the back, baby.
JJ, like, you watched him in the first couple games where he got, like, in the Arizona State game, he got some runs in, like, you know, from a wildcat position, and then he made the switch to running back. It is like he's like a completely different player now. His vision has gotten infinitely better in such a short amount of time.
He's learning to run. He's learning to run like a
running
back.
Some of the cuts he's made the last few weeks have been,
bro, that 66-yard touchdown run against Colorado.
It was crazy.
There's Utah football posted
like
a video
cuts.
On their Instagram of the run from the end zone. And what is so unique about JaQuinnon? He's 20 pounds lighter than JaQuinnon Jackson, but same size. Same.
You said.
Than Tavion.
Oh, sorry. Tavion. Yeah. Than Tavion, right? So you got this dude, 6'2", 230 pounds.
And that's according to the That's according to the roster guide. That's according to the players.
It's probably a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So JaQuinnon is six, he was listed at 6'2", 232. Tavion was 6'2", 238. And that's like the biggest 6-pound difference I've ever seen.
No, not, when you not, see not even close.
Next to each other, it's like, man, that is a heavy 6 pounds. but you know, JaQuinnon, so 6'2", 230. And this is like the point I'm trying to get to here is the run from like the view on this video, he runs with such good pad level.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see him behind the lineman. You don't see him at all until he bursts through the second level and he's in full sprint mode at that point.
Yeah.
And like that's the thing about him is like he runs with great pad level. He runs with better balance, which is why he was able to make those cuts.
Yep.
And be so elusive. He's just a better, like he's a better athlete. Like Tavion is super talented. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. He's talented, but JaQuinnon is just the athleticism that he has, the things that he's able to do. It's special.
And he's just
learning how to do it.
And he's so decisive now too. Like you see him make one cut, like a jump cut or a one step cut.
He's
full speed ahead. Like right. He's not dancing in the backfield. He's not trying to like overthink, like where's the hole going to be?
I think that
he sees a little bit, makes one cut and he's downhill, which is what you
want.
That
has been the most impressive part to me because as a former quarterback, I mean, and obviously he is comfortable with running as a quarterback and has been for, I mean, that's kind of been his role as a quarterback when you look at everything he's done. Right. But like typically running in the middle between the tackles for quarterbacks is kind of a timid area. Usually you're used to running away from guys. You're running to the edges. You're running away from guys in a read option situation. The way he runs downhill, like, and his acceleration mm-hmm. immediately from snap, my goodness, it looks like he's been doing this.
Looks like he's been a full-time running back since, for years, yeah.
Tavion Thomas would kill for the explosiveness off the snap and the speed at the line of scrimmage that he has, my goodness.
It's impressive. And, like, this is the thing is, like, so it's tough because you've got this athlete in JaQuinnon Jackson that has just started to learn the finer details of playing running back, right? Like, talking about playing running back, it's like, how difficult can it be? You're taking a handoff and you're running to a guy. There is so much fine detail at the position. You've got to be on the right track. You've got to be take the right steps. You know, there's certain footwork that you take on certain handoffs. And so you've got to learn those things. You've got to understand like where you're looking, but also you have to feel the rest of the line of scrimmage. You have to have a feel for it.
Yeah.
And that's been the impressive thing is, like, he looks so athletic, and the feel, the vision is starting to catch up to that athleticism. And that's, like, you get super excited when you're talking about that. Like, he is not – like, Tavion had supreme instincts and feel at the line of scrimmage. JaQuinnon is not there. I'm not trying to – like,
yet.
None of us are trying to say that he is there. But that's the key. Yet – JaQuinnon is going to work at this. He's going to be good. And will he, like, for Friday, he is going to be important.
Big, yes.
For Friday. Because this can be a real difference maker for Utah in this game on Friday compared to how they played in October. Utah only ran the ball 138 yards against USC on October 15th.
That's insane.
Tavion averaged 3.5 yards a carry in that game.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is this
43
again, this
points
is,
with 138 rushing yards.
Yeah.
This is exactly why I'm like, I think JJ's my, like, the player I'm most excited to watch on Friday.
Yeah.
Is because if he can get going,
he only
if he
needs
can get
to
going and start, picking up good plays, that's gonna take a ton of pressure and open up a lot of stuff for Cam and Dalton and Vele and Money and
yep.
Makai, like everybody, if JJ can get rolling, that's going to open up so much stuff for those guys.
I just got chills.
Yeah. Oh, I did too.
Oh, it's you love it. The game is still going to fall on like Cam. Cam is still, Cam, Dalton, your stars have to be great in these games, right? Like Cam has to be everything. But a real difference maker could be Jaquindon Jackson.
Yes. Speaking of Dalton, last we saw him, he went down with the head injury, it looked like, and went back. Everything good?
Yeah. It's like, as far as he'll be know. Good. Yeah, he'll be good.
Warrior.
I would be surprised if he's not out there.
Cool. Yeah, same with Clark. Very cool.
Yep.
Man.
They'll be good.
But yeah, Cam.
Friday, baby.
But Cam, we have seen, obviously, week 12 get right games are great. Week 12 get right games are great. But what do we think? You know, he's been sliding a bit, frankly.
Sure.
It seems like the past few weeks. Tough time for, or I guess, is Colorado game the perfect time for him to get back in a rhythm? Or.
I don't think he has a choice, right?
Like, yeah.
It's got to
it's
be.
It's got to be. He did look good. He did look good against Colorado. He had the one missed throw to Dalton, but, I mean, really, other than that, he looked pretty dang good.
So yeah. Close on and, that, too. And
it's Colorado, but I think it's got to be a confidence booster for
and
him.
Honestly, like, so last week, before the game, before the Colorado game, I was listening to a Yogi Roth interview, and he was talking about Cameron Rising, and he was talking about, it just looked like he got out of, he wasn't playing with the same fundamentals, the same, and obviously part of that is the fact that he's got a big-ass knee brace on his knee that probably is impacting, you know, the injury is probably impacting him a little bit, costing him in some of his fundamentals and, you know, his throwing motion a little bit. And yet he just kind of talked about, you know, every now and then a quarterback just kind of needs to hit the reset. You're going to have these games where you're bad. You're not, you know, you're not yourself. And you kind of have to hit the reset button. And I feel like what we saw in that Colorado game, like Colorado, we've said it many times over the last week, Colorado is bad.
Bad.
You can't take away much from like the numbers that he's posted. Like the 232 is great. The 3 touchdowns, great. The 17 for 19, great. Like, cool. The most important thing is that Cam was decisive and he made throws that he needed to make in that game.
All right.
To use a basketball analogy, sometimes you just got to see the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah.
And I think the Colorado game was a perfect way for Cam to see the ball go through the hoop.
Okay. One more thing to make Utah fans feel optimistic going into this game for the offense.
Oh boy.
How many points do you think Cal scored against USC?
Ooh. Oh, what did they score?
Just because of how you asked
they lost.
Just because of how you
they
asked
lost.
This question, I'm going like 35.
I was gonna say 30.
So Cal was the one team that Colorado beat this year. Colorado who was bad. Maybe before that game, maybe the worst team in college football history, people were saying. Cal lost to that Colorado team.
Mm-hmm.
Cal scored. You were dead on Tyson.
35?
Yes!
Yeah, that USC defense is bad.
Utah
is bad.
Utah. If Utah scores under 35 on Friday, it's like, frankly, if they score under 35 on Friday and lose, still an offensive failure. Like, no matter what happens. Like, you have to score over 35 points on Friday.
Yeah.
You just absolutely... I almost don't care what else happens in the rest of the game. Like, if USC somehow scores 12 points on Friday and Utah scores 30, I'm going to give the offense a C grade. Like, you have to score 35 points against this USC team.
But what if you just control the clock the entire time?
You'd probably need to score 35 points. Like...
Nah, just, screw that.
Even controlling the clock against this team, they're not good enough. If you're controlling the clock, that defense should be giving you points.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I would hate to see a slow start from Utah offensively that they just couldn't get out of because that feels like the game.
Yeah.
Like you both mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll So, you know, it's going to be fun. Like, we're back in the Pac-12 championship, second year in a row, 4 out of 5 years. Pretty impressive, very impressive run for Utah football over the last 5 years, over the last decade, really, right? Like, just an incredible climb. I was looking,
it's been great,
trying to look up some numbers over the years, and just the amount of wins, the amount of talent that they've brought in, it's increased exponentially over the last, you know, 5-6 years or so. So it's been great. It's been a cool climb.
When's the last bowl game Utah missed? When's the last time Utah missed a bowl game? Were they 5-7 in 17?
17, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
They've had 3 5-7 years in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've never had less than 5 wins, fewer than 5 wins.
Right.
And yeah, they've only had that three times. That is remarkable.
Yeah. It's been an impressive
run. For a non-blue blood program to have that kind of sustained success. And like the seasons they have that are above that are not 6-win seasons. They're 8-win seasons.
Yep.
If Utah, like I said, Utah had how many things go wrong this year and might have a 10-win season out of it. Wow.
Pretty damn good. Yeah. Pretty damn cool.
Universally good.
Yeah. Love it.
Real quick before we wrap, I know we got to go, but Steve and I are driving down to the game this week, Thursday. Or just if you look for us, if you see us in Vegas, come find us. We have a t-shirt for you. We have a t-shirt and stickers for you. Come find
stickers.
Us.
Ooh, yeah.
In Vegas.
Yeah.
Yes, if you see us, come get a Utah Blockcast t-shirt from us.
Beautiful. Tyson, we'll see you down there.
Oh, yeah.
Cam, obviously. We'll be down. We'll be driving down there.
So. Yeah, you'll see me when you open your trunk.
Yep. So, when I open my trunk. What?
Taped up.
I assume that's where I'll be riding.
Duct tape over the mouth.
We're excited, Utah. Utah fans, we appreciate you guys as always. Thank you, Blockheads. Man, looking forward to Friday, man. It's going to be a good one.
Back like we never left.
Yep. This has been the Utah Blockcast. Signing off.